This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 31 of the Neil Reynolds Podcast, brought to you by Elite Sports Travel. Now, before we get into this episode, I just want to remind you all that Elite Sports Travel is currently offering excellent packages for a host of NFL games in 2021, including Super Bowl 56 in Los Angeles. You can get all the details at www.elitesportstravel.co.uk/Neil Reynolds. And it's really good what they offer. They are really good guys. I think you should check them out. We'll get to the podcast in a second, but you should check them out. One of the things they do for their clients, again, it's a really elite service, is they send out merchandise packages to all their clients ahead of any event they travel to. So that might include Super Bowl merchandise, some delicacies that are local to the destination, other kind of useful things to make the experience great. They can't do that this year for Tampa, of course, because everyone's at home. So what Elite Sports Travel have done is send all their past Super Bowl clients a complimentary lockdown Super Bowl survival kit containing everything you need for that Super Bowl party at home. And as proud sponsors of the Neil Reynolds Podcast, they've given one of them to us. So yeah, we've got one of those Super Bowl survival kits. It's worth over £75 and you can win it. So just all you've got to do is go to elitesportstravel.co.uk/Neil Reynolds, enter your name and email address, and then we'll pick a winner on next week's podcast. So let's get into this week's podcast. It is a very special guest, one of the best offensive linemen. We haven't had too many offensive linemen on the show so far, and this guy is an all-pro, so one of the best, a first-round draft pick of the Indianapolis Colts in 2016. It's Ryan Kelly, and after his $50 million contract extension with the Colts last season, Ryan became the highest-paid player in his position at the NFL. He is a really good one, but if his mum had had her way, Ryan would have been playing a football of a whole different kind.
Well, I tell you, I actually started out with soccer. That was my first sport I ever played. And my mom tells the story better than I do. But she said the first day of practice, about halfway in, I ran over to her and I said, I don't want to do this anymore. And I would like scream whenever she would like pull up to the soccer fields the next day, the next following weeks. And so that was my first sport. And I guess the American in me just wanted to play regular football. So I started playing probably in the third or fourth grade. I was just a little kid, you know, real small. And I can't say it was my first love. I think baseball was my first love as far as sports goes. But I knew that I loved it. I just wanted to keep playing. I stuck with it. And, you know, look at me now.
Yep, not too bad, eh? Not too bad. Worked out all right. So kids don't grow up wanting to be offensive linemen, do they? Were you always offensive line?
No, they don't. But since day one, I've always played offensive line. So I never got to be the quarterback or anything like that. We had, there was rules, I guess, and as far as like weight capacity. So like I was a bigger kid. And so once you get past a certain threshold of weight, you can't play the skill position. So you can't catch the ball, you can't run the ball, and you can't throw the ball. So it stuck me at offensive line, and I've been there ever since.
And who did you like growing up, you know, teams or players? And again, did you gravitate towards offensive linemen, or are you like the rest of us as kids? Were you looking at the quarterback, the running back, the receivers?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, it was an awe of all the skill players, you know, but I really liked Notre Dame. I had this, you know, I'm an Irish Catholic kid. And so that was like my dream was to go play at Notre Dame, you know, where, you know, they're the Fighting Irish, and I loved Brady Quinn, and I loved all these different players that played there. And I was never a Cincinnati Bengals fan, being from Cincinnati, probably because they just didn't have the greatest track record of wins and losses. But, you know, I just really loved college football. I always wanted, you know, dreamed of playing it, and didn't know it would actually be a reality until, you know, probably I was 16, 17 years old is when I really thought I could actually do it.
Can you take me through that, your last year in high school? Because I know what that's like for an athlete. You know, you're probably trying to concentrate on playing your games, but everything's about that next level as well and getting recruited. And then you tear your ACL, right, in the last high school game?
Yeah, so I actually committed to Alabama the summer before my senior year, which looking back on it was the best thing I did because it really gave me the weight off my shoulders to go out and have fun. My senior year of high school was such a blast. I mean, you know, being 18 years old and, you know, being around all your friends, like your true classmates and people that you've grown up with your whole life, was really, really special. So, like, in that sense, I really, really appreciated and loved my last year of high school football, and I really got to enjoy it. And then the last game of the season ended up tearing my ACL and LCL, which was my first injury that I ever really can remember. I remember being so not scared, just so nervous. Like, you know, for the first time in 18 years, I can't walk on my knee. I can't put any pressure on my leg. And so I remember being a little terrified. And I give credit to Dr. Krimchak. He's an incredible surgeon in Cincinnati. And he said, we're going to get you back. We're going to get you back, you know, for May when you need to go to college. And so that was really, looking back on it, like, I think a lot of the injuries, I'm kind of getting a little off topic, but a lot of the injuries, you know, in the NFL, injury rate's 100%. You're eventually going to get injured. And I think having that happen to me when I was 17, I realized I could push through anything. I think that's probably why, in long story short, why I kind of got to the level that I am. But, you know, just could not. And then kind of circling back, Alabama did, you know, they were from the very beginning said, we're not going to pull your offer. We're not going to rescind it. We stand behind you when we gave you that offer. And so they really did. And I can't thank them enough for that.
Now, up until suffering that knee injury that could have seriously threatened his NFL dreams, Ryan's experience playing high school football is still one he looks back on with fond memories. He calls it the purest form of football, one that came with pre-match meals of McDonald's and anything else he would avoid eating now as a professional athlete.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the what I consumed, like, as far as like nutrients and stuff before games. I mean, I remember my senior year eating McDonald's before, like, fast food before a football game, and like thinking to where now I'm at, I'll be 28 this next season. If I was to eat McDonald's before a game, like, how terrible I would feel. So, and you know, just like high school football in general is just the purest form of football, because, you know, there's no the when you start to get paid for something that you did as a kid when you started, you know, it's incredible because the stage you're on and because of the level of athletes that you're playing against. But like Friday night football when you're in high school and you know every person in the stands knows you, you know them, and you have class with these people, like, that's really, really the essence of football and like just sports in general. I mean, that's just the best, you know. And so I loved it, man. I had so much fun.
Tell us about the Alabama experience, playing for Nick Saban, playing for such a big program. I guess by the time you get to the NFL, you've almost really been a pro, haven't you, bud?
Yeah, you know, I had a lot of learning to do. I mean, people ask me when I go back and think on it, why I committed Alabama, why did I go there? And, you know, it's crazy at the age of 17, you make a decision that will alter the rest of your life. You know, it has that kind of power. And so I just remember all the schools I looked at, Alabama didn't promise me anything. You know, Nick never made me a promise. He just said, you'll have an opportunity and we'll do everything we can to help you be successful, which that was the absolute truth 5 years later. And so, you know, being 17 and being thrown to the wolves, for a lack of better words, was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. I was 9 hours from home. I couldn't go home. I couldn't see my buddies. So I had to adapt. I had to adapt to my environment. I had to learn, had to grow. And you know, the college coach is a little bit different than the NFL. I mean, when you're 17, they have to mold you into, you know, to grow up quickly. And so there was some serious struggles there where I didn't think I could make it, you know, but I didn't do anything spectacular. I just did what they asked me to do school-wise, football-wise, you know, working out. And I grew, you know, I got better. And just the platform that they put you in, it's just a recipe for success. I mean, if you just do what they ask you to do, you're going to get better. And I think that's why they continue to have success. And it really just, you know, I'm just a byproduct of that incredible environment.
For your position, and particularly I'm looking at college at the moment, for your position there, how much is it about consistency? You know, I saw in your junior year, no sacks allowed, senior year, just one holding penalty. And I'm thinking, you know, a receiver can have a 60-yard catch, a running back can rip off an 80-yard run. For you, how important is it to kind of be at a good level, snap in, snap out, week in, week out?
It's vital. I mean, consistency... I can't remember what Chuck Pagano used to say it was, but it was always like availability, accountability, consistency were like, you know, the big main reasons as to why you have success. And that was, you know, obviously speaking in the NFL, but it still applies to college too, is you know, can you be that consistent leader? You know, they're skill players are going to have up and down games. That's the way they roll. And, you know, they sometimes they wear it on their sleeves. And how consistent can the offensive line be? And I think my senior year, we won the first Joe Moore Award, which was the first award given to an actual offensive line unit. And that was really special. You know, I think that it wasn't how great we played as. I think it was more of how we led and how consistent we were as an upfront to give the team success. And so I think that is obviously something that's huge for just the position in general.
What was the draft process like? Because I know with the combine, they test you physically, but they kind of push your buttons mentally as well. You've got all of that. You've got people like myself who would go, oh, we're experts. And then we tear your game apart, even though we've never put our hand in the ground, right? You know, it's oh, yeah. incredible, right? So what was that all like to deal with?
Man, that was so much fun. I think back to it sometimes, and I wish that I would have really taken it all in. So I trained in North Florida in the Panhandle. It was close enough to Alabama, and so I didn't go to the Senior Bowl, which is where a lot of the guys, you know, they see your film, they study your film for years and years. They want to see who you are as a person, and so the Senior Bowl was a great opportunity for a lot of guys to go in front of NFL scouts and to present themselves personally wise. And so I didn't have that opportunity. I decided not to go. So I went to the combine, where a lot of guys who went to the Senior Bowl got all their meetings out of the way. So I was swamped. I mean, I had meetings from the time I woke up to the time I went to bed. And it was the most mentally draining 3-4 days of my life. But I just was who I was, you know? And so I'll tell you a quick story. Jeff Stoutland was my offensive line coach my first 2 years in college. He left in 2012, 2013, went to the Eagles, and he's been there ever since. So I'm at the combine, and Eagles have a meeting with me. This is a night meeting, so it's a formal meeting. They have the offense coaches in there, the head coach, GM, all kinds of stuff. And Jeff Stoutland's running the meeting, and he's pulled up 4 or 5 clips of my plays of my senior season. And he knows the offense because, you know, he was offensive line coach for 3 years. And so he knows I can't lie. I can't throw anybody under the bus. I think it was more so a test because, you know, being a center, you have to have total ownership of what you do. If you're, I could easily go in there if something bad were to happen, you know, lie, make up. I told them to do that, you know, and they just didn't do it or whatever it was. So I think it was a test of how well do I know the offense, and more so just how well and do I have, you know, basically lack of whatever was the balls to own up for my decisions. And so the first two plays were fluff. They were, you know, they're really good plays I had. And the second two plays were probably some of the worst I've had. And, you know, he basically gave it to me, you know, pretty good. And after the meeting, he like gave me a huge hug. He was like, hey man, like I'm really, and, you know, we had some back and forth when I was 17, 18 years old, because I was a stubborn kid and, you know, he was trying to break me in. And so after that, we had a big hug, and I'll never forget that. That was kind of like the aha moment where, you know, all the things I did in college and all the growing up I had to do really culminated into that process. But really, just, you know, long story short, had such an amazing time at the combine, man. It was so cool. And truly, you know, I mean, I remember in there writing plays in front of, I think it was Chip Kelly, and looking back, and he was asleep, and I was like, what the hell am I doing here? Like, yeah, you know, and there's obviously teams that aren't going to draft you. You know, there was a team, they had just taken a center in the first round the year before, and I'm like, why am I even here? You know, but I think that's just, you know, coaches move on, they go different places, and they want to see who you are, and it's a great opportunity to present, you know, yourself in the best stage.
I knew they pushed your buttons. I didn't know they fell asleep on you.
Yeah, I mean, I can't blame the guy because I'm sure after 10 or 12 of those, you know, interviews, they're probably like, yeah, we get it. You know how to run, you know, base zone offense. And so it was a lot of fun, though.
While Ryan's time playing football in college took him far from home to Alabama, his 5 years in the NFL have kept him closer to his family, just a few hours away, in fact, in Indianapolis. It means his parents' trips to watch Ryan play are much less strenuous. While he played in Alabama, they would often drive from their home in Ohio for more than 8 hours across 2 days to see their son in action.
That's right. I wanted to go to Indianapolis. We had a pretty good idea. You know, if you have to have a need for a center to draft him in the first round. And so we had a pretty good idea. And I say we, my agent and I, as to what teams needed him. It was either going to be the East Coast or it was going to be the West Coast. And then there was Indianapolis in between. So I was really lucked out. You know, my parents sacrificed a lot to come see me play in college. My brother actually played at the Naval Academy. He played football there. So it was 8.5 hours from my parents' house to see him play on the East Coast. And it was 8.5 hours to come see me play in Alabama. And so they would drive Thursday, drive about a couple hours, drive the rest of the way Friday, stay the night, go to the game Saturday, turn around Sunday, go back to Ohio. And so they logged some serious miles watching us play. So draft night, stressed out, and I get a call. Atlanta picked, I think 17 or 15 or 16, somewhere in that range. And I get my phone starts ringing, and it's a 317 area code number. So it's Indianapolis, Indiana. And I was like, I lost it. I was like, this is incredible. Like, I get to go to the second closest NFL team to my home city. And, man, I mean, my parents were so happy, not just the fact that I got drafted, but also they're really relieved they didn't have to travel very far anymore. So, yeah, it was a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Was there a moment in your rookie season, and obviously you played such a high level of college football anyway, but was there a moment where, and it might have been on the field or off the field, where you were like, okay, so this is different now. This is the pros. So whether it's preparation or just blocking Aaron Donald, whatever that may be, was there a moment that kind of made you kind of think, okay, I'm now at the next level?
Well, there was a lot of ups and downs our rookie year. We played in Wembley Stadium, man. That was really cool. I mean, I remember that like it was yesterday. So much fun. We stayed at the Grove, walked the course, man. It was beautiful. So I have so many memories of, I think when you're in such a, you know, I knew I was starting from the day I got there. And so I think when you're in that environment and you're so, I wouldn't say stressed, but everything is just, it's so new to you. You don't have all these experiences. I think you remember them a lot. So I remember my first week there, going through cadences with Andrew Luck and being, you know, in college you have on one and you have on two, you know, there's not, you don't have a lot of time to put those in. I remember just studying 12 different cadences that he had and how well he could work them all. Man, I mean, it was stressful, you know, knowing that in 4 or 5 months from then I was going to be actually going into a game with these guys and I'd have to be on my stuff. So there was definitely some stressful times. You know, after a few games though, I mean, your rookie season goes by in a blink of an eye, but I remember just rolling through the season, like playing decent. And I was like, you know, I could do this. Like, you know, this isn't too bad. And I remember just being at the end of the season being like, wow, that was way longer than anything I've ever played in college. You know, college, if you go the full 12 games, go to your conference game, go to the playoff, and go to a championship, it's 15 games. That's not even a full NFL season, you know? So that was really the awakening part. But you know, I feel like I knew after about midway through the season, I was like, I can do this. You know, I definitely got some improvement to do. Like, these guys are really good, and I don't get to, like, have any days off where I'm not playing anybody that's not great, but certainly feel like I belonged.
That's really interesting, the bit about the cadences. I just made a note to follow up on that. So 15 different cadences, would that be 15 different words or just different inflections of the same words?
So you can do different numbers. You can do different colors. You can interchange them. I guess the best way to put it is like a train. You can do one train. You can do three cars in a row. You can do one small car, two big cars. I mean, so imagine like, and it's not, it is what you say, but it's also how you say it. He was just so good at the way, you know, he could get guys to jump off sides, and he knew what situations guys were preemptive to jump off sides. And so that was kind of like, I had this entire playbook to learn. And I also had like, I knew how to do zone. I knew how to do power. I knew how to do all these runs. I was like, I need to figure out how to do these cadences. I can't be snapping the ball early. And, you know, he got me to jump off sides a few times, and man, that was just looking back on it, how stressful I was at that scenario in my life. Just something so small could just get me so stressed. It's just funny to laugh about now.
Yeah. Tell me, you've got a lot of your career ahead of you still, but you've been through some bumps. You know, I guess that's what happens in any NFL, but you've been through, and I know the bond between a quarterback and a center, you've been through Andrew Luck injury, Andrew Luck sudden retirement. You've been through coaching change. Maybe tell us about how you ride out some of those things. I mean, let's start with that, with Andrew's situation where you know, the retirement comes in a preseason game and you guys have got to get ready for the season. And that was your guy. And particularly for you, that was your guy.
Absolutely. You know, I really, you know, it is crazy. And the more I've learned in the past 5 years, I mean, it's crazy to think that I'm going into year six. But it the level of professionalism in the NFL is so much different than college. You know, it's really, this is your job and like whatever it takes to be successful and to win as a team. And that's why everybody's here. So I kind of wrapped that into, you know, my rookie year, I had Andrew for the entire season. Mm-hmm. The second year, Andrew wasn't playing. We knew that from the beginning. And so we had Scott Tolzien and we picked up Jacoby Brissett 3 weeks before the season started. And so week one in the second, in the third quarter, they threw Jacoby in for the rest of the season. And I had battled injuries that year, so I didn't really get to play with Jacoby a lot. 18, get to go with Andrew. And that's kind of when we started solidifying our offensive line. You know, we really put together a good offensive line. I think we were number one in NFL sacks, not allowing Andrew to get hit. And so we're thinking we're rolling. You know, this is going to be incredible. We've got a lot of young guys in this team. We're going to be a great team for a long time. And, you know, that season before 19, that summer before 19, I remember Andrew coming up to me in the locker room before the preseason game. I wasn't even playing. And he pulled me aside and I could just see how much decision weighed on him and how much it was tough to tell all the guys before the game. I think he told us to select few of the guys who, you know, the offensive line who, you know, he gelled with for so many years that he wasn't playing. And that was really tough to hear that, you know, and that's something that I've learned as I'm getting older is, you know, this game will take a lot from you. I mean, it's 100% injury rate and every dollar you make in this league is well-deserved because you're putting your body on the line out there every single week. And so the ups and downs of emotions and then Jacoby going in there. And that's what I've really realized when I reflect on things is how I look at the situation that Jacoby was thrown into, a guy who started for a year, became a backup, then started for a year, then became a backup. And like his professionalism and the way he's gone about it throughout all the criticism, all, you know, everything that he's had to deal with really just is the essential, like professional football player. And that's the best title you can be. That's the best title you can, that someone can talk about you when you leave is, you know, he was a pro, you know, like that's like a true team guy, knew how to be in there week in and week out and be accountable for his team. And so, you know, it's been a crazy 5 years, man. And the coaching changes, you got all kinds of stuff. I had 3 different offensive line coaches in 5 years. And, but everybody's there for the same reason, you know, and I think that's what makes the NFL so special.
We'll be back with more on the Neil Reynolds podcast after this short break.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast.
Welcome back to my conversation with Indianapolis Colts All-Pro center Ryan Kelly. Now, before the break, we spoke about Ryan's relationship with quarterbacks, Andrew Luck in particular. Continuing on that theme, I wanted to ask him how close someone like him gets to a quarterback. As the center, it's Ryan's job to protect Andrew Luck, and in the past season, of course, that was the same case with Philip Rivers. So how does that dynamic work?
Oh, man, really close. You know, just you're always around him. I mean, you're in blitz protection meetings with him. You're in install meetings with him. You're in a locker room with him. You're, you know, and so they're all a little different. You know, they all have their different quirks. And, you know, certainly Andrew was no exception to that. But I love them. They're all so different, you know, and I just, you know, after a touchdown pass, looking back there and seeing Andrew like jump up in the air, you know, and give us a big hug, or Jacoby's the same way, you know, doing dances with us. And then Philip, you know, being 39 years old, you know, and coming in for a 1 year contract to play with us, man, it's just every year you get is so special with these guys. And they truly, the amount of stress that we're under, they're also, you know, they're probably even more, you know, how much they have to learn every single week. And just talking life with them, talking football with them, they're all so different. They have so many different, and that kind of, I'll bring another point is just, I remember somebody told me this one time, they said, my favorite thing about football is the huddle. Is you have 11 guys from 11 different backgrounds. They could be from East Coast, North, South, East, West. They could be black, white, Hispanic, doesn't matter. He goes, but that at that point in the huddle, all 11 guys are in there for the same reason, fighting for the same guy next to them, and they're doing the same play. It's like the coolest combination of people. And, you know, that starts with the quarterback. And every single one of those guys I listed is just totally beloved by the locker room and just, you know, grateful to be a part of it.
Yeah, Andrew, when he ever used to come over to the UK, he'd start talking about books he's read, visits he was going to make to Spain. He even once started talking to me about, oh, I've been to Korea and I was in the DMZ, the bit between North and South Korea. And I'm like, you're not your typical NFL player. You're going to be absolutely fine when you walk away from football.
Trust me. Imagine being on a bus going through London. Oh, we landed it. We landed at Heathrow at like, I don't even know, 6:45, 7 in the morning. We took a red eye flight. Imagine Virgin Airlines first class seats were not made for offensive linemen. So we're all trying to get 6 hours of sleep. And I think we maybe got 45 minutes at the most. And you're on a bus with Andrew and he's like, you know, it feels like he's already had 9 lattes since he's gotten to London. And he's on a bus and we're just going through the city and he's talking. I miss this now, but it was always a history lesson. We went to Denver. He would talk about Denver's airport, all these different places. And he's just so knowledgeable about history. And so, man, that's just like something that I'll never forget. It's just the stories and memories of him and all of his history buff, man. It was hilarious.
So as we got on to talking about the intricacies of offensive line play with Ryan Kelly, I asked about the tone that gets set by the Indianapolis Colts. They're a very physical offensive line. Ryan is a physical player. Quentin Nelson is a physical player. But there are techniques to being an offensive lineman as well. So we talked about technique, about attitude, and whether it's an attitude to play offensive line that is needed as well as skills.
It is, you know. Certainly it's a mentality that, you know, as we go, the offense goes. I think that's number one. You know, we protect the quarterback. We make lanes for the running back. And, you know, like I said before, wide receivers and skill players have ups and downs in their game. You know, they have great games. They have some not so great games. And that's really determined by stats. And so for us, that's not, you know, our stat is how many yards rushing can we get and how well can we protect the quarterback. And so, you know, I think that you have to have that mentality going into the game. You know, it's obviously a very it takes a lot of work mentally to get in the right position. And you have to know fundamentally how you're going to do things, but also it's a mentality of how physical can I do it. You know, if you can break the will of the front seven, that's what really accelerates as you as an offense. And so, you know, having the smarts to play inside the whistle, play with fundamentals so you don't get beat, but also play the physicality to dominate. When you culminate all three of those, which are not easy to do, you know, at the same time, it just really increases our offensive line play. I think that across the board, we all do that really well.
I once hosted a sponsor dinner, lunch in London, and Andrew was the guest. And one of the fans was there and they asked about you. You'd just been drafted. You'd gone through your rookie year.
Yeah.
And I think he meant this as a compliment. So take this, please, as a compliment. Somebody said, oh, well, what's Ryan Kelly like? He went, he's an asshole.
Yeah.
Right? You got to play with a bit of that.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I feel like I probably got that stigma a little bit in college too. That kind of comes with the center responsibility because, like I said before, you have to own things. And when you're in charge of four other guys and their calls and everything that they do, you have to be kind of that prick in the middle. And so, you know, I didn't come in my rookie year. I didn't come in right away doing that. I think that I wasn't talkative as much, you know, and I certainly didn't. I had a little bit of chip on my shoulder to go in there and excel. But yeah, I have no problem with Andrew saying that. There's definitely some truth to that.
last couple, obviously, it's a team game. It's about wins and losses as a team. But how did it feel to earn those All-Pro honors this year, to be one of those best of the best?
Yeah, it was truly an honor. I mean, that's, you know, we all have individual goals. That's why we got here. That's why we're all at the level that we're at. But, you know, a typical lineman fashion, you know, my answer is going to be like, it really is the guys around me. You know, there's Quentin gets a lot of praise and I get a decent amount of praise too. But the three other guys that play with us, because Anthony Costanzo just retired this year. But the right side, Mark Lewinsky and Braden Smith, they don't get enough credit for what they do. You know, and that's, look, I mean, it is what it is. We really all have personal goals that we want to reach. And, but you know, having Phil be the second least sack quarterback, was the biggest goal, you know, and getting over 200 yards rushing. So whenever we get game balls as an offensive line, we get them as a group. And that's what really means the most to me. It's just the guys that I play with. Last night we went to dinner. It was just the five of us and Phil. And And it was just such a special night. I mean, just anytime you get to have, and we're all so close. Like that's what's so cool is when you're in an NFL room for 5 years, guys come and go, you know, for a while there, my first 2 years, it was a turnstile of guys just coming and going weeks in, weeks out. And now to have finally an established offensive line where we're all still relatively young in our contracts. It's really cool. And I think we all recognize how special it is. And so that's, long story and long winded short, love playing the guys I'm with, man. It's awesome.
Now we do try to keep things relatively timeless on this podcast, but while we're in the throes of the playoffs, I wanted to ask Ryan about how it is for those players who are no longer involved. We saw recently the Colts season went down to the wire, ending on a Hail Mary attempt from Philip Rivers against the Buffalo Bills on wild card weekend. Had Rivers pulled that off, the Colts players would have been back in their building the following day preparing for the Baltimore Ravens and a shot at the subsequent AFC Championship game against the Chiefs. Instead, 2020 was over for them. Suddenly, there was no more football until September.
To go from week one losing to Jacksonville to playing Buffalo in the playoffs, it hasn't even been a full week since we played, and it feels like months, since we've been out there. And so that's what we were talking about last night is it's one thing to be halfway through the season or towards the end of the season and know you're not going to do the playoffs. It's a weird mindset to be in. And it's weird. It happened to me my rookie year, knowing you don't have a chance to go to the playoffs, but when you make it to the playoffs, cause it's so hard to get there, to go 0-1 and be out. I remember after the Bills game, Frank saying, hey, tomorrow we'll have team meeting at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, whatever it was. And that's the last time I'll probably see some of these guys the rest of my life. It's weird. It is. It's like the train just stops, you go 1,000 miles an hour every single day, your routine, boom, done. So now I'm at the house doing all my to-do list stuff. And I'm like, man, like we were just playing less than a week ago. It's such a weird feeling, but that's why as I get older, I try to really just take in every season because it's all so different. You never know truly, when that championship season is going to happen or, when it's going to be your last. 2021, man, it seems like 2020 was so crazy. Like how can 2021 be any crazier? And so, I think you have personal goals you want to get better at. This it only gets harder as you get older. I mean, the game slows down, but so does your body, right? So how can you take care of your body? I think is always it gets more vital as you get older, and so that's something I really come to appreciate and don't take for granted. So that's obviously something I'll do in the offseason is take care of that. And how can we get better as an offensive line unit? We're obviously going to have a void in the left tackle, so we're going to have somebody new in there. That's kind of my responsibility to make sure that, he plays the standard and the rest of the room holds him to the standard of what we've come and what we've produced here. And then to get away from football, man, I love the fish. We have a 10-acre, I call it a lake because technically 10 acres is a lake. So I have lakefront property, but others say it's a retention pond, but I told them that's not true. So that's kind of a little, they try to joke with me about it, but I fish, man. I fish and I play golf. Those are my two things I love to do. My fiance, we're getting married in May, so my fiance and I have a little dog. We take care of him, and man, it was just I love being from the Midwest and being so close to my home. It's nice just to like look out and just see the water. You take a step back from football and seeing a football field every day, and being in front of monitors and seeing just X's and O's, and be able to like appreciate being outside. Man, it's really nice, and so I try to do those as much as possible and watch a lot of Netflix and just like everybody else, man, just get through it. So, just having a heck of a time, man. Love it. And any day you can spend in the NFL is just awesome. So
you are talking to the world's worst fisherman. I'd never fished in my life until episode one of this podcast in March, just before the pandemic, when everything shut down. I went fishing with Ryan Fitzpatrick and he had to bait the hook and everything. Cause I can't stand fish. I like the idea of fishing. I like being on the water. And I caught one, but I just don't want to touch fish.
Yeah. I'm with you. And it seemed like golfing and fishing were the only two things that you could really do during COVID. I mean, you could walk the course and play, and no one could stop you from going out there and fishing on the bank. So I'm glad those are my two hobbies, man, because I probably would have gone a little stir crazy had it not been. So
fantastic. One last bonus question. I did say that was it. Who's the toughest person to block? Who gives you fits?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's weird to think about. Like, there's been certain guys on who were only here for a week or two that I couldn't block. You know, it's the weirdest thing. We talked about it as like the five of us will get together and we'll talk. We'll just be messing around, and some of us will talk about certain guys that, you know, certain memorable games where we gave up a sack or we got beat or whatever it is. And I remember just talking to him about this. I'm not even going to say his name, but I think he maybe played half a year in the league, and he was a wrecking ball. Like, I couldn't block him in practice. I don't know. Whatever it was, man, he was just my kryptonite. And so
Wow. You
have those guys. Everybody's got one of those guys where you just couldn't block this guy in practice and you saw him every day. But, I mean, you know, obviously the Aaron Donalds of the world are so good because they have the ability to do speed to power. And I remember blocking Vince Wilfork when I was a rookie at 23 years old, and it was his last year. I remember thinking, like, dude, I'm like, my first game against this guy, I'm like, I'm getting ready to go block Vince Wilfork. Like, how am I going to do? And you learn, you know, that these guys are human too, man. And you learn the professionalism of the game. So I'm not going to keep the same set every single time. I need to change it up on him. I need to look left, but go right. Or maybe, you know, it's right off the snap. I kind of with my offhand, just give him a little smack in the head. It's minute. People don't see it, but that stuns him for a second and gets him off his game. So there's like these craftiness, professionalism things you do to try to give yourself an edge. And I think that's not answering your question, because I can't say, hey, this is a guy I can't block, right? But those are the things inside of the game that are really that make you professionalism. And even if you're going against Aaron Donald, gives you somewhat of a chance, you know? So I think it's cool in that sense that as you get older, you learn those things.
So there you are. That's my conversation with Colts center Ryan Kelly. Very nice guy. Great talker. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's bring in producer Gary Hayes now to open up the mailbag. How are you, Gary?
Hi, Neil. Good, thanks. How are you after your 6 a.m. arrival at home after the playoffs?
I'm a little bit sleepy. Voiceover Monday is not necessarily my favorite part of the week, but yeah, I muddle on. It's not like I'm going down the mines or anything, Gary. I'm sitting watching TV for a living, so I'm all right.
Well, I'll try to keep this all brief for you, but we've got a couple of little bits of, how shall I say it, housekeeping to go through. First off, is I want to know more about this Super Bowl Survivors kit, the Super Bowl hamper, because I work on this podcast for you, but does that rule me out of entering the competition to get it? Because I want one.
Well, there's only one up for grabs. Yeah, from our sponsors, Elite Sports Travel. And Gary, you can enter. I'm just going to make up the rules. Go for it. Put your name in. Go to elitesportstravel.co.uk/Neil Reynolds. Put your name and address in, Gary, and fill your face. I don't know what's in the hamper, but I know that this is going to be good. You know, it's just all part of the service. When you're a client of Elite Sports Travel, you do get treated very well. So, go for it. Otherwise, you'll be just, packet of Pringles and a pickled onion or something, probably, on Super Bowl night.
You know what? Last night, I cooked some cookies to watch the Bucks against the Saints. I bought some from M&S, put them in the oven. It was lovely.
So you warmed up some cookies, basically. You just warmed up some cookies.
There's a lot of effort put in. There was one more thing, and this wasn't by design, but it was sort of made me chuckle when I was cutting this episode together. If you remember last week with Justin Jefferson, we cut in the little bit of audio of you promoting your services to him for being his tour guide to the UK. And after the interview with Ryan, when we did this, earlier on, he had mentioned about being part of the Fighting Irish fandom and loving Notre Dame. I can't pronounce it. And you're going to hear from this. Notre Dame, right. I prefer Notre Dame, as in Paris. But so you hear when I say to him now, I'm like, Notre Dame or whatever. I can't even say it. But I just want to put this little clip in there because it made me chuckle. And I think it will make you chuckle and our listeners. So here we are with me asking Ryan about Rudy. Ryan, do you mind if I ask you something?
Ryan? Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, yeah. Just you saying about Notre Dame. I watched a movie called Rudy the other day.
Oh, yeah. So Rudy was like my God when I was a kid, right? I just wanted to be – and then growing up, like hearing the stories of like the actual Rudy, and knowing walk-ons, you know, I had some incredible friends who are walk-ons, so I'm not saying, I'm not dissing them by any means, but like that, I just remember being like, I'm going to be Rudy. I don't care. Whatever it takes to get Notre Dame, I'm going to be that. And then I didn't get the chance, and I was like, dang it, man. But how'd you like it? Did you like the movie?
Oh, it's inspiring. Yeah, it's inspiring. So I don't want to take more of your time.
Brian, I'm teaching Gary about football, and all of Gary's football references are cultural. So it's like Dan Marino won the Super Bowl in Ace Ventura. It's
oh,
all
yeah.
That's all he's got at the
Brett moment. Favre was Chris Cameron Diaz's boyfriend. In
oh, yeah. Oh, that's good stuff, man. I love it. Well, dude, I'll leave you with this. I never forget walking into Wembley Stadium, and there were Cincinnati Bengals fans. There was like, you know, you have these jerseys. And I think a lot of people. It was incredible how packed the stands were, but also how many different jerseys you saw. Like, it wasn't just a Jaguars versus Colts. It wasn't. You don't see all those jerseys. I mean, it was Green Bay. It was so cool to see. Just how far like American football has come in London. And so it was really just really cool. So I'm actually, as crazy as that trip was, and as gosh, I mean, taking a red eye over there and getting no sleep and, you know, doing all these things, as crazy as all that was, I told the guys, I'm like, I would love to go back. I hope we go back soon. Hope it's this year. Hopefully it all calms down. We can go back. So
fingers crossed. Yeah. We'll welcome you back anytime. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely, man. All right. Man, I appreciate it, guys. You guys stay healthy, man. And thank you again for having me.
And there you go, Neil. He's a big fan of Rudy, and I'm a big fan of movies, as you keep finding out to your detriment.
Do you know what I'm a big fan of?
Please tell.
The mute button. And I'm happy if you leave it muted while I do the interviews. I'm quite happy with it. I did enjoy that. And I'll tell you why I enjoyed it, because you hear me. You have such a fresh approach to the NFL, and it all comes through whatever film you've watched, whether you've watched some teen drama where some quarterback turns into a werewolf or something. I don't know what they do in these things, but it's fascinating. Yeah, I like it. Good contribution to the chat. I thought that, you know, I thought we had a very good conversation with Ryan Kelly, and I didn't know how we could end it on a real high, and then you delivered.
Yeah, I know I shouldn't really jump in at the end, but I was just gagging to ask him. I was like, because I'd literally just seen that movie 2 or 3 days before, and by chance, and then he starts talking about, you know, the university. I was like, I've got to ask him back, because it was an inspiring movie. So if you haven't seen it, go and watch it.
Fantastic.
Right, on to the real work. So we get into the mailbag. Three questions, as always. And this one, I think, is pretty timely, given that the Bucks have gone deep into the playoffs. So it's about Bruce Arians, our friend, and Tom Brady. So, from Michael Preston, Neil, since Bruce Arians has suggested that Tom Brady wouldn't make a good coach because he's a perfectionist, do you think he would be better suited as a TV analyst, not in the Romo sense, but more a Roy Keane in the studio, criticising players exacerbated by their performance? Maybe he could be with you on Sky Sports.
Oh, hey, I'd be up for that. That's my old work colleague, Mike Preston. Shout out to Mike, living over there in Providence now. Big Pats fan, big Brady fan. I would say Brady would be good at that, but I also think that there are only very few that are good at being critical, and a lot of players have trouble being critical to other players, especially even in a studio role. I think the point that Mike makes about, and Bruce Arians makes, about coaches from players is a valid one. If you're an all-time great, I think it can be frustrating. I think we heard Rod Woodson tell us that on our podcast a couple of episodes ago, that, you know, it kind of frustrated him that players didn't have that same burning desire to be great that he had. So, I'd like to see Tom kind of come over and, cut his analytical teeth in the UK. So, you know, me and Tom can go, we could become like tennis partners or something, and, go bike riding and have picnics and you know, play golf together and then go in the studio. I'd be up for all of that.
Be like the dream team, wouldn't it? Neil, Jeff and Tom.
Be fantastic. Maybe Tom could make us look younger, because that seems to be working for him. He looks like he's 12 years old.
Do you think that he could be as angry as Roy Keane?
No.
He seems too much of a perfectionist on the pitch, but he seems too chill off it that he would ever want to sort of grab punditry by the scruff of the neck and sort of damn everyone to hell because they couldn't execute a pass.
Plus, he wouldn't be able to frown really, really, really get really angry and frown really seriously. That's probably what Botox does to you.
The TV12 method.
Yeah. If I stick an allegedly in there, we're all right. We can say whatever we like, right?
I'm sure yeah, we are. Good. But they're your words. Right. Matthew Sepp Fryer with our second question of this mailbag. Much shorter.
Our Neil. Last mailbag.
Clearly. Neil, which NFL player was the hardest work when interviewing?
Oh, God, I'm going to get into more trouble now.
This is definitely the last mailbag.
Yeah. So there's a tight end. People will remember him for the New York Giants and the New Orleans Saints, Jeremy Shockey. And I went to interview Shockey in training camp in New Orleans in 2008. I think I've told this story to you before, and he didn't want to be interviewed by me. And he sneaked out the back of the training camp locker room and then tried to climb a fence and couldn't get over the fence, and then had to do the walk of shame past me and just say, oh, sorry, I've got to go to a team meeting. But he tried to sneak out the back. He eventually came to London, I think a year or two later. He wasn't playing. And he'd had a bit of a falling out with the commissioner of the NFL and the NFL generally. And he was quite outspoken. And it was one of those interviews where, well, first of all, let's just say he'd had a good drink all afternoon. I'm not talking water. And then he just kept swearing. And it was, as I was interviewing him, I was just like, I can't use that. Can't use that bit. We might get 10 seconds there. I can't use that. Do you know what? This whole thing's done. We're not getting anywhere. So one time he tried to run away from me and couldn't get over a fence. And the second time when I actually tracked him down, he was three sheets to the wind and not worth talking to anyway.
Sounds like we need to get him on the podcast.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant. Let's really dig into the life and times of Jeremy Shockey.
Right, last question from Ben 64727372. Not sure if that's his phone number or his last name number. Or whatever.
Let's ring it. And see.
Ring it, girls. I'm sure Ben will pick up. Right, Neil, what do you think the Patriots should do in the offseason to compete with the Bills next year and make the playoffs? Should they be sticking with Cam Newton, or should they be going after a new quarterback?
I think they need to go after a new quarterback. I think Cam's nowhere near the player he was. I think they had a little look at Jarrett Stidham and they don't think he's the answer. It's not always easy to sort of find that quarterback solution, though. And the Patriots have had it for 20 years. And now they maybe will go through what the Miami Dolphins did for a couple of decades. You know, you stumble from one quarterback to the other. It can happen. They're not the worst team in the NFL, so they're not going to get first dibs on one of the top quarterbacks coming out of college. It's a really difficult situation the Patriots are in, and they can't compete with Buffalo at the moment. They can't compete with Miami. They don't have enough skill position players either. So, yeah, it could be a long road back, but they definitely need a new quarterback in 2021.
Tough times in Foxborough.
They are indeed, yeah. But not on this podcast. We are loving life.
We are loving life, although I am getting a bit anxious because I don't know who our guest is for next week. So can you let me know who it is?
It will be somebody who has been in the NFL. And maybe that's still excellent. Is. Maybe still is. Well, same way I went from Justin Jefferson to not knowing who it was going to be and then nailed down Ryan Kelly. That's how I'm rolling through these playoffs. Rolling / stumbling. But we're getting you good guests. Hopefully you're enjoying them. So my thanks to Gary Hayes and his wonderful contribution to the Ryan Kelly interview. Thank you to Ryan Kelly. And most of all, thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week. Was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds. Our producer is Gary Hayes, while Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. Special thanks to junior producer Henry Smith and everyone else involved in helping us put this episode together. The Neil Reynolds Podcast is a Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.